Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, our guest on the show is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks so much for being with us. As you're listening, you can keep emailing questions for the mayor to ask. That's ASK at WBAA.org. Good afternoon, Mayor. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Emily, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Fine. Thank you.
So we're going to start with some listener questions.
Okay.
John writes, what is the status of the reconstruction of the Teal Road 4th Street intersection? I've heard for the last 2 years that it is imminent.
Yeah, that is a Department of Transportation project through the state of Indiana. So that's not actually a City of Lafayette project because that's considered US 52 coming through town till it ties into the new 231. And then that's both till you get out back out to 52. But I can tell you that they are still working on relocating some of the utilities, relocating some of the, and we have to relocate some of our water lines. They've done it in phases. The project originally came in way, way over budget when the first rounds of proposals came back to the state a couple years ago. And so they've been doing that in phases. So right now they're still in the process of relocating all of the utilities. They're coming up with some of the design work. In fact, I think there was an article maybe in the paper about it the other day, and it looks like some of the actual construction work will begin sometime next year. And then that will be, again, that will be phased in over multiple years. But I would expect from what I've heard that people will begin to see some actual construction in 2021.
Okay. We have another question from Dwayne, who says, thank you for the Twickenham project. I know that it is not completed, so hopefully this will not be an issue later, but my wife and I were driving in the finished lane eastbound on Sunday during the rainstorm, and the drainage was horrendous, and horrendous is in all capital letters. Better to look into that before everything is closed up.
Yes, well, the east lane is actually not done. So what we never put what's called the final top coat on it till both sides are done. So if you look at it, you will see that the road is not up to the edge of the guttering that takes the water into the inlets that actually then take it down into the pipes, because we'll have equipment that still has to run back and forth. So if you put the top coat on that lane, it's going to get tore up by the equipment that's working on the other side. So we do all the granular backfill. We do what's called the base and the binder.
Okay.
And that's where we're at on that side. And then when the other side is done, totally done, the trails are in, everything's finished, and both sides of the road will be up to base and binder, then both sides of the road at the same time will get a final top coat on it, and that will get the elevations into the gutters and the curbing that house the inlets that takes the water down to the pipe. So it's not at that finished grade yet on either side, and once that's done, that should take care of all of that.
Okay. I guess while we have you, do you have any other updates for us on Lafayette Road construction you'd like to issue on the air today?
Well, I mean, we're still doing some paving on some of the different roads, not really reconstruction, but paving, and we'll be continuing those for the next few weeks to get that done. We have one road that's where we're doing some sewer work out off of Teal Road there on 30th Street. But overall, we don't have a ton of big roads tied up right now, so we don't have a lot. We have a lot that's happening, but it's what we call much smaller projects and typically than we've had in the last several years, where people have had to deal with Sagamore Parkway being under construction, parts of 26, all of Earl Avenue. You know, in the last several years, we've done some massive, massive, not only road projects, but water, sewer, and stormwater lines under all of those. So this is a much... we're doing a lot of projects, but they're much, much smaller with a lot less traffic impact than we have with some of our larger projects.
Okay. So the Tippecanoe County Health Department modified their order yesterday governing when and how restaurants, bars, and nightclubs operate. And we talked about the order last month on the show, right, as it was starting to kick off. And bar top service wasn't permitted in that initial order. Now it's permitted until 9 p.m. You said at yesterday's coronavirus press conference, this was a good first step and a step that could be done safely. So when you're talking with bar and restaurant owners in Lafayette, I guess my first question kind of is, what are you hearing from them about the loss in profits they're seeing? You know, what's the specific financial impact of not having bar top service and the financial impact of closing down a bar at midnight instead of later on, like 3 a.m.? You know, what are you hearing from the from those people?
Sure. The impacts are very, very real. And, you know, that's why I had started a few weeks ago working to bring back some bar top service at some level, because one of the things that happened, you know, when you take away bar top service is, one, you lose the customer base that comes in that wants to just sit by themselves, wants to sit at the bar and eat, have a sandwich, you know, over lunch or dinner, and you don't have the ability to do that. But what also happens is, if the people do want to eat, then you have to use a four top table for one person or a two top table for one person, and you can no longer turn those tables over or put as many people. And when most restaurants can't actually get to the 75% because they can't space the tables out far enough, and then you lose the bar top to boot, you know, you're really pinching some people down in that 50% mark. And when you're down at 50%, you're talking about losing thousands of dollars a month. I mean, if you just think of having to use your two tops and your four tops, and then losing the bar or losing those customers and what you can turn over in lunch and dinner, I mean, you can easily be losing $2,000 to $3,000 a week. Well, you multiply that times four, that's, you know, that's $12,000 in a month. And then month after month, that money is very, very real. And that's something that a lot of places just can't survive doing over, you know, much longer over the period of time that we've had. And so the stories that I hear from folks are very real. They're very appreciative that we've been able to get these bar tops back into use, because it will help at the bar, but it also won't tie up those two and four top tables. So the need is real. You know, we're very, very pleased with the way Open Air Eats has taken off downtown two weekends now, and very, very good feedback from the restaurants downtown. And so, you know, that's we're working together with the Friends of Downtown and the restaurants and the City of Lafayette, providing the security and all the picnic tables and those types of things. But that also is helping. So we're doing everything that we can to help our locally owned small businesses stay alive. I don't know if you had a chance to see, or some of your listeners, I did a video that I put out asking people to help our locally owned mm-hmm. small businesses. And you know, the city, I think to our credit, got that $400,000 of help out to some of our small businesses early on, and we got that out quickly to people. And so, you know, we're going to continue to work to do those things. And you know, the hour that we talked about, you know, we talked about trying to add an hour to the midnight. We weren't able to get that through this time, but those discussions are still going on. I still think that's very important and can be done safely. I've heard from folks who serve people that get off at 11 o'clock, that work 3 to 11, that actually eat when they get off. They might come in and they eat dinner, maybe have a drink or two while they eat. You know, the midnight just doesn't work, because you can't get those folks in and get them served and get them out of there, because by the time they drive from their place of employment, maybe 11:20 or 11:25 before they get there. So we certainly want to keep looking at that, and I want to keep that discussion open. Again, I think that's one that can be done safely and can help with our other establishments, you know, keeping people in business. Economists across the country, even though the percentages may vary, you know, they've all said, I've heard anywhere from, you know, 30 to 60, 70% of all small businesses, locally owned businesses in the country could be gone over the next 3 months if we can't find ways to keep them open and to help keep them going. So we certainly want to do that. We want to do it in a safe way. And I believe the community is responding well. Our positivity rates are very low compared to the rest of the state and the nation, and even with Purdue back. And so we want to try to maintain that, but knowing that we can't just live in fear and we can't destroy the economy, and we've got to find ways to balance that and do it all safely.
So it sounds like conversations among local officials, I believe you mentioned this yesterday, are kind of ongoing about the order and about all things coronavirus related. You know, last month you and I talked about your concerns about drive-thrus being included in the order, and then the health department took them out, and that sort of addressed that population of people you were kind of just talking about who have a different schedule than the 9 to 5, and making sure that those people's needs are addressed. In terms of adding that extra hour on, and again, this number might be imprecise, but how many people are we talking about that in that niche, I guess, of people? How many people does that impact, that kind of late night hour, the circumstances that you just described?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably more than people realize. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have an exact number, but I've heard from, you know, several places, and there are other that they don't actually call in. They talk to other people and have those people talk to you. But I mean, I think it's more than people realize. I mean, we do have a very strong advanced manufacturing base, that we have a lot of places that do work second shifts. Some places that even, you know, work third shifts. And so, you know, you don't always think about that, right? We're all learning as we go through COVID-19. There is no roadmap for any of us to follow. And so, you know, sometimes things happen and there are unintended consequences, and you have to be able to adapt and react and change things. And businesses are doing the same thing. And I think that's why it's important that we have these open lines of communication and that we all keep open minds, because not everybody does live the same schedule. Not everybody works at the same time. Not everybody shops at the same time. Not everybody eats at the same time. And that's why I was glad to be able to get the drive-through actually changed before it even really went mm-hmm. into effect, because, you know, that did. A lot of people that work 11 to 7, you know, at night, they go at 3 a.m. to grab a bite to eat somewhere. And so we have to all keep that in mind, that everybody has different lifestyles, different schedules, and how do we do those things to accommodate those people in the safest way possible, and to keep those businesses that depend on those customers to help keep them viable. Also, you know, it appears that the unemployment rate, you know, for our county is continuing to trend downward. And so we want to be able to make sure that we keep it going in that direction, and continuing to help those small businesses. I mean, it's just really hard to imagine the community with some of these small businesses and restaurants gone. I mean, they really are what helped give some of the character and the flavor and you know, that fabric that makes up the community. And so, you know, we got to do everything we can to help them stay viable through this difficult period.
You're listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. Right now we're talking with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. And Mayor, I was going to ask how the Fresh Air Eats program was going. I've heard a lot of people talking about it. It seems to be pretty popular. And that is slated to end after the first weekend of October. You can correct me on that if I'm wrong. But, I mean, is there any possibility of that getting extended? I know that the weather can come into play there, certainly. But it is, I think it has been established, certainly, that, you know, outdoor eating is safer than indoor eating. So could it last a bit longer? Is there a possibility of that?
You know, that's certainly, in my mind, a possibility. And somebody just brought that up to me yesterday And I said I was certainly open, you know, to those discussions, because as you indicated, you know, some people do feel safer eating outside. And obviously it's been documented that being outside is safer than obviously being in an enclosed space. So it does a couple things by us having that available. One, the people that aren't comfortable doing some indoor dining will come out. And then by expanding the amount of dining that the places have, they can get a little bit higher percentage there, which means they can turn those tables over more times. And they have more tables to turn over if they're able to get people down there. And so it really has been a win-win. I've had lots of nice compliments about that. And so I'm open to those discussions. If the Friends of Downtown and the downtown business owners feel that, you know, carrying it out a few extra weeks with the, and the weather cooperates, certainly from the city standpoint of providing security, providing all the picnic tables and getting those picked up and all the signage and everything that's needed to close the streets and security, we are certainly more than happy to continue that if everybody decides that's a good idea.
So West Lafayette City Council just passed a mask mandate ordinance, and they're going to be revisiting that mandate, they said, at least every 6 months, more frequently than that if they need to. And right now, Indiana's statewide mask mandate is set to end in just a few weeks. And if the governor lifts it, and we don't know if he will,
right?
I guess, what are you thinking? What would you do if this conversation kind of comes back up and needs to be continued?
Well, we'll have to look at the numbers and all the things that we use to evaluate the situation at that particular time. As you know, I've been very consistent about following, you know, the governor's mandates as closely as possible. And I think the mandate that he did, what was for the whole state, was the right way to do it. I think there are so many advantages to having a statewide mandate that everybody is familiar with, and with the number of people that we have coming in and out of town here from other counties and stuff, you know, having that statewide mandate is the best way to do that. And so we'll have to evaluate. My guess is that he will not lift the mask mandate coming up, and that will continue. But if that was not the case, then we would certainly have to take a look at that. I'm not going to speculate at this particular moment what I would do. I mean, again, it would depend on, you know, does he totally reopen things? Does he keep them closed but get rid of the mandate, which in my mind seems highly unlikely. And of course, you know, what are our hospitalizations? What is our positivity rate? What is our ventilator use? You know, all those things that we continue to discuss. But my guess is that the mask mandate, you know, on a state level will be in place for quite some time yet.
So we've been talking a bit about how local businesses are doing, and we've talked about economic development before and how it's a driving force behind getting people to live here, getting people to visit Lafayette. What is the most important thing for the city to focus on right now in terms of economic development? You know, what are the, yeah, so I guess I'll start with that.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, what we have to do and what we've been able to do is continue our quality of life initiatives that we have in place that allow us to attract those workforces that we need, help our current businesses keep the workforce, you know, that we have, and those types of things that we know from working with everybody from around the world, right? From Subarus and Toyotas to GE Aviation to Nanshan to Caterpillar to Wabash National. Places at Purdue like Schweitzer Labs and you know, Saab and all those places that we have at Purdue, is quality of life, workforce is incredibly important, right? So the things that we've been able to do, like the building that just finished beside City Hall, Pullman Station, the two new buildings we have going up that'll start going up downtown. One yet this year and one next year called the Romick Ellsworth and the other over in Main Street. yesterday, you know, we were able to, or after the city council meeting, announced a partnership with a new developer to invest $12 million into a near downtown Lafayette neighborhood. We're still doing our infrastructure projects. The baseball stadium is still being completed. The lagoon is still being renovated. The Penguins are coming. You know, we've worked very hard to continue to be able to do those things through this COVID-19. So as the vaccine does come out, we move into 2021, we have positioned ourselves through infrastructure, through quality of life initiatives, to ensure that we're able to meet those demands. We're in the process right now of designing a new police station for our police officers, and a new approximately 500 space parking garage for downtown. We just put two more air conditioners on the top of the roof of the Lafayette Theater to get that all ready for when we can begin doing things again. So, you know, all of those things are important. And then the city staying in good, sound financial condition. We've been able to do that. We've managed our money well over the last several years. We have a rainy day fund. We have cash in our operating balances. Obviously, we're going to take a hit in the next couple of years with our income that we're going to be receiving. But we've working very hard to take care of that and to still be able to continue to do all these things. And we've been able to do that. So I feel like our community, Lafayette, West Lafayette, Tibby New County, we're going to be positioned very well coming out of COVID to promote our community and to have the pieces in place to continue to grow and prosper.
I'd also like to note that I'm thinking this might be the first time on since I've hosted the show that a mayor has said the Penguins are coming. So I'm going to note that.
Yes.
So I guess, what are your concerns out of all the things you just mentioned, or do you have concerns about having to put some things on hold dependent on where the city is at financially? That was a laundry list of items. And is something going to have to come off of that? What are you thinking in terms of that?
No, you know, I don't think anything will have to come off of that. I mean, when you look at the new buildings, two of the new buildings downtown, you know, those are public-private partnerships. So the city is involved, but at a very, you know, very small piece. And so that's all private dollars that are going in there. We continue to have good growth, and we've had good growth in our assessed valuation this year. So the things that we have started, I don't see any of them having to stop. And we're definitely not going to stop building our police department, a new state-of-the-art police department. So right now, you know, there's nothing that we're going to have to stop. Will we be careful about, you know, not starting anything new, maybe looking at the next couple years if it's not, you know, really critical or we're not comfortable? But right now, we're in good shape. We've managed our money well, and you know, the citizens' money, we've managed it, and we're able to leverage it because we do a lot of public-private partnerships where the city plays a small role. Like, we invested in the new YMCA that does just fantastic things for the community, but we're an investor. We didn't pay for it. In the North End Community Center, we're an investor, a small investor, but that's private dollars too. So we help fill gaps to make projects happen at different levels. And through the use of those public-private partnership, where we use a small amount of city dollars to leverage private dollars, we've been successful in doing that. And that's just like the investment that I talked about in the Romick Ellsworth neighborhood. That gentleman's looking at investing $12 million. We did some sewer work down there to make it possible, and we are solding some railroad relocation land at a very, very reasonable price. It's just been sitting there, not being used. So we're leveraging that land and some small investments for him to invest $12 million. And so by being able to build those partnerships and those relationships, we've been able to get a lot of these things done and still make the financial piece work for both the private individual and the community.
So things are, you know, ever changing in the COVID landscape. That's kind of been true on many levels all along. As you were saying, people have had to adjust. As you're looking, it's likely that things will continue to change. Things might get better, they might get worse. We'll see when a vaccine comes out. When you're looking at, let's even say, the next 6 months to a year, or even the next 3 months, do you have multiple scenarios that you try to consider? You know, here's the worst case scenario. This is how we might need to react to that. As planned, how are you pivoting and looking at like what could happen and making sure that you're ready to react?
Yeah, we did that a long time ago, actually. We started looking at that months ago, looking at 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, and 5 years out. We have scenarios. If we lose 5% of our revenue, 10% of our revenue, 20% of our revenue, if we have to touch our rainy day fund, if we don't have to touch our rainy day fund, if we have to touch our cash balances or we don't have to touch our cash balances, if gas tax goes back up, and more people start driving, income tax loss based on unemployment and looked at projections, if unemployment stays at this level, if it stays at this level. So we've actually started that months ago, doing those projections, and have multiple scenarios that we have looked at, and we know if we need to push forward here, pull back here, if this happens, because all funding sources are not the same, right? So, and they all are affected differently. We lost lots of money from the gas tax almost immediately when COVID hit. Mm-hmm. So we've been dealing with that right now. Now people are starting to drive again. By next year, that might be totally back to normal, but COET and EDIT will be down because of the way that it's in the rears of collections. And then distributed. So, and then property tax, are a year in the rears, and you look at assessments that were done in the previous March to get your AV. So literally we've probably run 50 or 60 scenarios, talked through different things of what we can and can't do and what might happen. But we actually started that months ago when this started to hit, March, April, by May, we had already started planning those scenarios going forward, all the way up looking at the next, 5 years.
So when do you, and this, I know this can be hard to predict as well, when you're taking a look at the landscape, when do you decide on one plan over another? When do you make that call? What's the tipping point?
The way our funds come in, and different funds pay for different services in the community, whether it's motor vehicle highway, whether it's excise, whether it's property tax, whether it's COET edit, whether it's fees, such as from the utility. So we look at those on a monthly basis. We every month we're reviewing all of those.
That is all our time for today. Mayor Wisworski, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, Emily.
This program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Crawfordsville, and Frankfort. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening and have a great rest of the day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.